This is EdUp Legal with your host, Deborah Solmore. She's an experienced higher education lawyer, most recently the general counsel for a system of nonprofit institutions, and she's going to be leading conversations about trending legal, regulatory, and compliance matters in higher education, with a focus on leaving out the legalese and making legal easy. Let's hear from your host, Deborah Solmore.
Welcome back to another episode of EdUp Legal. Today, my guest is Terry Gonzalez, a partner at the law firm of Alston & Byrd. So welcome, Terry. I would say welcome to the show, but I think I have to say welcome back to the show, because as you may remember, you were my first guest. And you also have the distinction of having that episode be one of the most popular episodes so far in my short tenure as a podcast host. So congratulations and welcome back.
Well, thank you for inviting me back. It's good to hear the first one went off with a bang, only to be seconded by this one.
Well, I'll keep you posted once this one gets published. So last time we were together, we talked about the student loan forgiveness landscape. And I believe we talked just before the Supreme Court handed down its ruling invalidating President Biden's debt forgiveness plan.
That's right.
And so I think that is episode number 76. So I encourage any of our listeners who are still interested in that topic, because it's definitely on people's minds again, still now, as student loan payments repayment will resume in October. Go ahead and episode 76, go ahead and listen to it. So today we're gonna talk about a completely different topic, go in a completely different direction, about a topic as important, disciplinary proceedings for colleges and universities. And specifically, we're going to kick the conversation off by talking about some recent guidance that was handed down by the California Supreme Court not that long ago.
Looking forward to it.
Okay. And as you know, you must go through this entire podcast by leaving out the legalese so people don't say, they're talking like lawyers. I read this case, and I have to tell you, there's a lot of legalese in it. So your challenge, if you want the episode to be published, is to try and talk, but not like a lawyer.
I am confident we can have this discussion as lay people and not as lawyers.
Okay, well, then I will kick this off by asking you to just give us a brief overview of what is this California Supreme Court case, what did it hold, and set the stage for why it's something that we should be discussing.
It is a case about a disciplinary proceeding at a university in which a student was ultimately expelled for committing violence against someone he had an intimate relationship with. The crux of the case and the discussion went to whether or not cross-examination in a live hearing was required to give that student who was accused of the violence a fair shake, a fair hearing, before he was ultimately expelled from the university.
Well, that was pretty good. You left out the legalese, so that's great. So let's talk about this concept of cross-examination. Why would that be so important for the court to look at? I know most people are like, oh, I know what cross-examination is. They see it on legal dramas all the time. That's where you have those gotcha moments. So why is this such a big issue in these disciplinary proceedings?
Yeah, cross-examination is the opportunity to question the person who was accusing or making the allegations, or to question the witnesses to sort of ferret out the truth. The Connecticut Supreme Court said, it has been said many times that cross-examination is beyond any doubt the greatest legal engine ever invented for the discovery of truth. It is a tool that lawyers use all the time, but what it comes down to is an opportunity to probe and ask questions and get a fuller picture of what a witness or an accuser has said about what happened in a particular instance.
And also goes to measuring people's credibility. It gives you an opportunity to decide whether they're telling the truth, correct?
Without a doubt. Challenging memories, testing credibility, probing narratives, those are the sort of the goals of cross-examination.
So now based on the statement that you just read from the Connecticut Supreme Court and your many years as a trial lawyer, I'm sure you, I know for a fact, as I've watched you cross-examine many witnesses in your career, how do you reconcile the California Supreme Court, where the decision said, in this kind of a proceeding, not required?
That's right. The California Supreme Court concluded that cross-examination is not required in a student disciplinary proceeding that involved an allegation of sexual violence. I think the California Supreme Court was considering a number of different interests in coming to its conclusion that cross-examination is not necessary in a disciplinary proceeding that involved an allegation of sexual violence. The first is the accused, who, if it is determined that that individual committed the wrongful act, could be suspended, could be expelled from the institution, and could have really life-altering consequences of a finding of wrongdoing. Then we have the interest of the accuser and wants to ensure that that individual is not re-traumatized by the disciplinary process. And then we have the interest of the private university, and the university wants to maintain a safe campus. It wants to encourage victims of violence to report instances, and they want to provide a great learning environment. And so balancing all of those interests is what the California Supreme Court was trying to get to. Where they landed was they made a determination of, or they made an analysis of, was it a fair procedure? And in, you know, outside of court, the California said they've never really required live cross-examination of witnesses for these types of disciplinary hearings. And it's important to understand that the university had a fairly robust process in place for conducting an investigation and determining whether or not the accused committed the what the accuser alleged in the process. They did an intake interview. Then if they were going to do a formal investigation, they would notify the accuser and the accused of the investigation. Both of them would be given an opportunity to review all the evidence. Both would be given an opportunity to pose questions that should be asked of the other side. That would be done in separate hearings by the investigator. If new evidence came in, both parties would be allowed to review the new evidence. Both the accused and the accuser would be allowed to have assistance during the process, including assistance of an attorney. And throughout that process, they could get support from those individuals. And ultimately, the investigator would make a decision, write a report, and they would take that report and give it to a sanctioning panel, a panel of individuals who made a decision as to what the sanction should be if there was a finding of wrongdoing. So it was a fairly robust process, even though it didn't allow for live cross-examination.
So let's talk a little bit about what the decision means first in California, right? So in California, I know that there is already a law that went into effect about a year and a half ago, Senate Bill 493, that applies to certain types of disciplinary hearings at colleges and universities. We have the Title IX regulations, the federal rubric about how to deal with these types of things. So how does this case fit in between, or, you know, sort of align with both the California law and the current Title IX regulations?
Yes, because we do have this shift from administrations in Title IX as to whether or not cross-examination should be included in Title IX investigations. And the Democratic view and the new regulations that are to be released in October of this year say cross-examination is not necessary. California Senate Bill 493 says the same thing, in that cross-examination of witnesses are not necessary. Those are focused on instances of allegations of sexual misconduct, sexual violence. But there are certainly plenty of other instances of misconduct that could warrant severe sanctions, such as expulsion or suspension. Take example, academic dishonesty, for example. Take a criminal act that one student does against another student. So the analysis by the California Supreme Court with respect to disciplinary hearings in general is broader, I think, than the Title IX regulations and Senate Bill 493, which really focus on a specific type of misconduct, and that is sexual misconduct.
And in these other types of misconduct allegations that you're talking about, there's no federal regulations or no state, or I guess we're still talking about California, no state law or rule that would have required cross-examination of witnesses.
No, I think, you know, for California, they have a common law analysis of fair procedure. You know, is the disciplinary proceeding fair? And that is sort of the benchmark that would be used in California if a student committed some other type of misconduct, such as cheating on an exam, and was expelled for it, and then wanted the court to review whether or not proceedings that determined he should be expelled was fair. California would use this fair procedures doctrine, which requires that the accused be notified and be having a fair hearing, but not necessarily a hearing that includes cross-examination. And one of the things that the court said was universities aren't really set up to law. They don't have subpoena powers. You know, they don't have courtrooms where they can make evidentiary rulings and things like that. And this doesn't really make sense for these hearings, these disciplinary hearings, to require cross-examination.
And this fair procedure, again, I'm going to try to not get into the legalese. It would be really bad if the host starts talking legalese, right? The guests we sometimes forgive, but I doubt we could forgive the host. The fair procedure doctrine that the court looked at was applicable to a private organization. So this opinion is really written about private institutions. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that doctrine was originally used to prevent sort of arbitrary expulsions of individuals from membership at private organizations. The court gave examples of mutual aid societies, fraternities, unions, but it looked at the private university to say, well, does that doctrine sort of fit to a private university? And the answer was yes. I mean, it's an important institution to belong to in your professional career, and it really affects your ability to practice in, you know, your given profession. And so therefore it is a private institution is an area in which this doctrine of fair procedure should apply, because it's an important institution to belong to.
And before we move sort of outside of California into just these types of proceedings, you know, best practices or thoughts about these types of proceedings generally,
outside of the requirements of Senate Bill 493, does the California Supreme Court decision prohibit an institution from using cross-examination in its disciplinary proceedings if it were to so choose?
No, it does not. And a private institution in California certainly could include live cross-examination in its disciplinary proceedings if they wanted to. The shift in the Title IX regulations, Senate Bill 493, and this California Supreme Court is moving towards giving the institution more latitude in determining sort of what's the best disciplinary proceedings for that particular institution. So if cross-examination was important to that institution, they can certainly include it.
I'm just going to stop for a second. That was the answer I thought I was looking for, but I'm looking at my notes, and my notes, I might be wrong, says that Senate Bill 493 disallows cross-examination and it takes priority over anything that's conflicting to it. What you said was what I was thinking, but then I like looked down at my notes to see if I had any more questions. And so my thing says it disallows it. So we should probably check that before.
Yes.
Because that would be wrong. I can look, and then we could record over that. But okay. So let's finish up with So to wind down this episode, why don't we talk a little bit about disciplinary proceedings and sexual misconduct cases generally? Do you have any sort of thoughts or best practices or guidance for institutions outside of California as you read this opinion. Now, obviously, this opinion doesn't apply to institutions outside the state of California, but I think, you know, some of its guidance and some of the proposed parts of the new Title IX regulations may be relevant to talking about outside of California.
Yeah, I think the case is a good example of a very robust disciplinary proceedings that can, you know, is really fair and fair to both parties. And some of those components are notification to the accused and the accuser that a hearing is going to be had, giving both parties the opportunity to review the evidence and comment on the evidence, giving both parties the opportunity to propose questions that should be asked of the other and of witnesses as well. One of the things that sometimes happens in these proceedings is the parties submit their thoughts, submit their questions, and new evidence is found or comes up after sort of the hearing is underway. If new evidence does come up, both parties again should be given an opportunity to review that new evidence and comment on it. And if new questions are posed, be allowed to do that. In the California Supreme Court case, it was an important case. It was a case of allegation of sexual violence. Their investigation lasted 2 months. So they were very thorough in what they were doing and moving through the process. But I think those are sort of the hallmarks of sort of a fair procedure and a thorough procedure for the institution.
Well, as always, I am grateful for your expertise and you passed the test. I didn't hear a whole lot of legalese, so I promise to publish this episode and hope that you will come back and talk with us again one day soon.
I will certainly hope so, and I'm very happy to hear that I passed the rigors of the no legalese test.
You did. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you again for sharing your insights.
Thank you. Pleasure being on your podcast.